What if an app could give a voice to children silenced by autism? It can. Introducing SpeakAll. To learn more about this and more than 400 other world-changing Purdue technologies, visit otc-prf.org.
Now, at this point, I could construct some pun-laden, groan-inducing metaphor to summarize the just-concluded session, or I could devote that time to the insights and reflections of my guests. Given the makeup of this week's panel, there's only one way to go. Option two. Here to assess the impact of the past 4 months and what it will have on the lives of Indiana's 6.7 million residents are House Speaker Brian Bosma, an Indianapolis Republican, House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon, an Anderson Democrat. Wow. Above and beyond the call of duty, because we have no secrets here with our viewers and listeners. We pull back the curtain. This is not even 8-9 hours after the gavel fell sine die, and barely only 5 or 6 hours after the bar is closed. So the fact that you all are here and seemingly relatively coherent is, I guess, a new definition of public service.
That's yet to be seen.
So thank you. And in all seriousness, I do appreciate it. Some housekeeping, since you're, I want to wake you up here. We'll start some simple housekeeping things. Finished 5 days ahead of your statutory deadline. Is that you just like to show off, or is it money? I mean, there's not even a Big Ten tournament kicking you out of the hotels.
We had to make up for last year. We had during my speakership, 12 years now, 11 years, I'd always said on time, under budget, and last year we had a one-day special session, and a lot of us wanted to make up for that, so we've got 4 days in the bank now. No, seriously, it was important for us.
I guess we have something to look forward to next year.
It was important for us to finish early. And honestly, the NRA convention, those members who are out of town, there would have been a difficulty in getting hotel rooms here in the next couple of days. So it made a lot of sense to be done.
And I don't want to dwell on this because you all are done now. And would you have appreciated more time? Would it have made a difference? I mean, to a certain extent, I guess the die was already cast.
My first time as leader, we finished early, and my ability to coach Speaker Bosma agenda and keep him moving right along with obviously what did it.
All right.
And it's a good thing.
All right. Now, another softball here, but I mean this sincerely. It seemed that after last year, you alluded to last year when there was a one-day session required, there was sort of a cluster right at the end, a frenetic few final hours. A lot of bills died that people didn't want to see die. This year, certainly the final day seemed... Mm-hmm. Somebody went to Lost and Found and discovered decorum and brought it back, I guess, to Indianapolis. Is my assessment right? And that, in some ways, that indicates the tone of the session. There were rancorous moments, certainly. There were contentious issues. But everybody, am I right? Let me ask you, Senator. Did you make a conscious effort to, even though you're a supermajority, even though he's a supermajority, I didn't see a lot of name-calling?
Well, we make a conscious effort to do that, absolutely. That's the way we should conduct ourselves and our state's business. But, you know, I really think a lot of the legislators, House and Senate both, learned from last year that realized that when you're in this conference committee part of the legislative session, you have to compromise, and you can't wait until the very last minute to do that. And I think a lot of legislators, in particular new ones, last year were trying to wait out so they could have their ideas prevail, and if you wait too long, it just dies.
And we learned from that lesson. The killing fields effectively last year. And again, the whole session, I'm not going to say that it was all kumbaya, as we say, but I mean, it did seem that there were adults in the room, perhaps more so than I've seen in recent sessions. And again, am I dreaming, or am I just getting soft and
I think you're right. I think that's a reflection. The pro tem's a gentleman, and he conducted this session in a way. And
I compliment him, absolutely.
Roderick Bray. And, I compliment him on the way that he handled session. And, on the other hand, I don't know. I think the tea leaves were pretty easy to read going into the last week. We pretty much knew what was yet
I think there
was to
read probably in January to a certain extent.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
that's
some issues. Certainly.
That's not to say there weren't moments of, on our side where we were disappointed. We were very disappointed that every one of our amendments to the budget got pulled. And we expressed that displeasure as I think we rightfully should have. But we did it, I hope, what was perceived as a respectful manner. And we went on. And we finished up in good shape, and I applaud the leadership for that.
All right. Well, now that I've complimented you on your civility and decorum, feel free to dispense with that for the rest of this discussion, because, you know, people like it lively. All right, I'm going to borrow paraphrase Ronald Reagan, who said, are you better off for now than you were 4 years ago? Our time frame here is 4 months. Are Hoosiers better off today than they were 4 months ago when you started this session?
Yeah, I really
Why?
Believe they
okay.
are.
Give me the picture.
Everybody had their priorities. Many of them coincided. That right. We said things had to happen for teachers. We had to invest in education. We invested record funds in education, $763 million.
New money.
Oh, yeah, on top Obviously. Of the $7.5 billion that was there already. We dealt with veterans. We dealt with their pensions, making them tax exempt. We dealt with infant mortality. So many things that we agreed upon. Now, there are a few things we disagreed upon, but we really had very common goals this session, including the adoption of a $35 billion budget that's responsible, maintains reserves. Unlike Washington, D.C., doesn't spend money we don't have. And I just feel very good about the result of the session.
I hear the argument was over whether to have a reserves of 11% or 12.5. I mean, it's probably
yeah, 11 or 11.
Washington might appreciate it. Yeah. I'm guessing you might have a different opinion,
Phil G. Quinta. Look, I think that your budget should reflect your priorities. And House Democrats had said from the beginning of the session that we really wanted to fund public education at the proper levels, and the budget, I believe, reflects around a 2%.
Two and a half each year, I think.
It's a little less than that, actually.
It's a little more than that.
I love it. We're disagreeing already, but that's good. Somewhere around 2.5%.
Did you get a donut this morning?
He didn't get his sugar.
In fact, when we all go and look at our school runs at Fort Wayne Community Schools, I think it's 2.2 in the first year and then 1.1% the second year. So, you know, when I think there's around 60 school districts that are actually losing money.
Are you more concerned about the base funding overall or the fact that teachers there was not a willingness, because it would have required a change in longstanding practice and statute, to force school districts, of course, to give teachers a raise. Right now, you can wheedle, you can cajole, you can ask them to hold the hearing and explain their decisions, but the ball's in their court. You would have preferred another approach, I'm guessing.
Well, we had amendments to a 5% increase for teachers in 20 and 21. We had a couple legislators did go with what you suggested, a minimum base pay starting out. But in the end, the money does have to be funneled through the school funding formula. And I personally don't, when I look at some of these districts and the money that they're going to receive, I don't see any money there for teacher pay increases.
Should teachers rejoice? Well, I know they're not going to rejoice, but should they storm the building with signs and placards, or
no,
do you think this is
absolutely not? You know, we worked hand in hand with them since last summer. We were talking with teachers and superintendents association, the school boards association, every association that represents education in our state has been at the table with us all along, and including teachers. And so the increase of $763 million is unprecedented and something I think we all need to be very proud of. The fact that it doesn't go directly into the pay raises is because the state of Indiana doesn't dare and doesn't want to get involved in paying teachers' salaries. It's something that needs to be done by the elected school boards, and we don't want to be interfering with local collective bargaining. So it was the right decision to make. But even then,
have the hearing. I lost track of that particular element. That was in the Senate version.
The school boards
would have to effectively tell the public what they're going to do with those.
Yeah, they're going to have an open hearing. It's going to be very transparent. People understand how it's going to transpire, and so. It's a process that's going to be very open to the public.
And I guess I should say that's at least a portion of the new that's the dollars, the pension liability that the state is covering. It's not, they don't have to, well, arguably they do have to answer for every dollar, but
well, there's a lot of
hearings.
Reporting requirements.
Sure,
too.
Yeah,
a lot
of that.
So we're going to know.
But
so,
even in the 2.5% you say that it goes up every year, that doesn't include that $150 million of the Biden that opens
that's
up another
one-time,
2% to another 2% to the schools.
Right. And there also are some grant dollars that actually the governor, and I think in his budget, had zeroed out the teacher appreciation grants. They came back in. I think there was agreement that should continue. In fact, it's actually increased. And there are some school safety grants and so forth in there. Is that enough to placate critics who say that schools still aren't getting enough, even though it's clearly 50%+ of the budget?
Here's the way I look at this. Because we didn't hear much of a vision coming from the governor's office in terms of where Indiana should be headed in this session, we really only had two things we needed to accomplish, I think, this session. One was to actually pass a clear bias crime bill, and the other one was to make sure that our teachers are paid on par where they should be. And I think it's very debatable whether we accomplished either one of those things. As far as the teachers go, yes, we drove a lot of dollars towards education, but the proof is going to be in the pudding. You know, a year from now, are we going to see teacher pay increases or not? We would have preferred an approach whereby you say we put the dollars in there and said these dollars will be used to give teachers a pay increase because we know they lag behind. They lag behind all the surrounding states. And so there again, I mean, you know, Indiana
you don't
has,
see that as some kind of encroachment on local home rule, as maybe your Republican counterparts would suggest.
No, I don't think so. But I think you make the dollars available and say these dollars are here, but they shall be used. If you want to use them, you know, use them for what we intend them to be used for. This is one of the problems I have with this session is I believe, you know, you should say what you mean and mean what you say. And that's true both for the hate crimes bill, which is now completely up to interpretation, and whether or not these dollars are going to actually be used to pay teachers more in the state of Indiana, which is what we need to accomplish.
Since you served up a great segue, I'm tempted to go to hate crimes, but I don't want to leave the budget yet because then we'd be doing a lot of jumping around. But we are going to get there, I promise. Another big talk headline generator this session certainly was child services. Going in, there had been a year's worth of controversy, outside consultant brought in, a lot of recommendations. We need $286 million a year because that's what we've been spending. Well, they didn't get that. I mean, they're getting about $500 million over the biennium, but not quite what they wanted.
Billion. Yeah, it's $1 billion.
There is a safety valve. I guess there's some dollars that could be directed from sales tax on gasoline. But is that enough for kids who are, I mean, that's the line of defense between kids and great peril, kids in the
right.
system.
So the new director, Terry Stigdon, and the Office of Management and Budget have worked hard to right-size services in the Department of Child Services. We outstrip every state, all our surrounding states, giant states like California, on the cost of these services. So
well, sheer numbers, too, if you look in the middle.
Sheer numbers. Yeah. There's been a 17% reduction over the last year in outplacements, taking kids out of homes, placing kids permanently away from their families, 17-18% in all these categories. So it was proper to give a small reduction to the, some would say, bloated budget there, which had increased by $286 million just in the last two years. So they got all but about $40 million of that, plus the governor, as you said, does have the ability to dip into the strong reserves that we have if an emergency is
crisis averted, perhaps. One of the complaints, certainly, that people on your side of the aisle voiced was that, okay, dollars, that's one thing, but also holding people accountable in the agency. You know, this is the set number of people who should be assigned to a given caseworker. This is the
right.
The majority seemed unwilling to do much more than make suggestions, sort of a la the teacher pay raise. Yeah. That's still the case, right?
Representative Hatfield had an amendment that would say sort of a trigger effect, and if you will, that if a certain number of cases reach a point or go above a certain amount, then more dollars would have to be appropriated or more staff would have to be hired, things like that. What I am concerned, though, is that I'm glad if indeed we are making progress, that when we start to kind of roll back some of the dollars, are we going to then roll back some of the progress? And that's what I think our fear is. And we would like to have seen the request would have been fulfilled that the governor wanted.
This is one of the deficiencies, I think, in the budget is that, for example, in terms of public defenders participating in the process, which we think would have helped streamline the cases, move them along, been efficient in the system. I think there was some provision for that to occur, but then the dollars were taken out. It's my understanding. So, you know, you have to have dollars if you're going to have professional services necessary to make sure that the system is working correctly. So we were disappointed in that. There were other areas. Indiana's health situation is we are always in the bottom of the list when it comes to so many things, including cancer, and yet we couldn't pass a tobacco tax.
There had been the push for $2, perhaps up to $2 a pack tax. Didn't really get off the ground.
Couldn't pass a vaping tax. So we took money out of the budget that was requested by the Department of Health, is my understanding, for public health purposes. So these are challenges, you know, that I say we did all that because, and there's a difference of opinion on this, we sort of worship at the altar of the $2 billion surplus. And I just think that we could have done better in those regards.
And we're going to probably have to move off the budget, but I want to give certainly Senator Bray a chance to weigh in. Also, if we looked at, if we're going in an order of the biggest expenditure, education, then we'll go to, well, we would have had Medicaid in there Medicaid, somewhere too. But yeah, there's not much, that's a federal issue, so there's not much right. We can waste our time with here. And you had to adjust the budget accordingly for unexpectedly high increases in payments, state payments there. And now we've talked a little bit about child services, transportation. Some big ticket items, the South Shore expansion rail line to try to get more people from the northwestern part of the state to jobs, ostensibly in Chicago, sure. High-paying jobs. There's some other, you know, trail funding for trails that the governor had wanted, different sorts of things, infrastructure, some road. You know, you live in Martinsville, and I don't have to remind you the Highway 37. Right. Not that I'm sore about that to visit my kids at IU or anything, but. Is that enough going to that kind of expenditure for these capital projects, for these infrastructure improvements that we just talked about?
Well, I don't know. Is anything ever enough? But it has to be. And we're putting an awful lot of money, millions of dollars, into that northern corridor and with the double tracking of the rail. And I think it's going to have a substantial benefit to that part of the state of Indiana.
And that rail got thumbs up, but the Amtrak subsidy to the train that runs, two or three times, four times a week from Indianapolis to Chicago, looks like it's on, it was on life support. Now it looks like the
flight's
coming.
Takes 5 hours to get there.
So no one's shedding a tear?
Well, we've got a finite amount of money. If you had all the money in the world, sure, you'd fund something like that. But you have to prioritize, and unfortunately, not everything, even if it has some value, can make it into the budget.
Before we leave the budget, there's one thing in there. And now, Senator, you mentioned all of your amendments in the Senate side were shot down. If I'm not mistaken, there is a Democratic amendment that is in the budget from Ed Delaney about pre-existing conditions and insurance.
Yep.
Which I think, when all said, in 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, when everybody's forgot about how much you're spending on education, you won't forget, I know, but maybe others, that issue actually could come back to play big time. What's the thinking there? If you sell insurance policies to Hoosiers, you've got to recognize pre-existing conditions.
If the Affordable Care Act is repealed, which there's discussion of.
Which the state is trying to. It's part of the.
Absolutely.
It's trying
absolutely.
To repeal.
Then there is a provision, if the state gets back into the regulatory, setting and approving the policies, that they must approve policies that cover pre-existing conditions. I mean, it's proof that we're not like Washington. Ed Delaney put that up, sounded like it was a good program. We put it in. It stayed in. It became a little controversial at the very end because some members of the Senate didn't realize that that provision was in there. But, we talked it through, and it stayed. So that's Indiana law now.
So here's how. Let me rephrase. So if the state loses its court challenge, then it can do what it wants. I mean, it is an interesting juxtaposition, certainly, in terms
right.
of, I mean, is there some irony here?
Well, I applaud that. We have bills to do that. This is the great thing about politics. The Affordable Care Act was adopted in 2009 or something like that, and it took over time for everybody to realize that coverage for pre-existing conditions is a wonderful thing. And now the public is solidly in back of it. And yet we have an attorney general who wants to repeal the entire Affordable Care Act. So we said some time ago, we need to preserve it here in the state of Indiana. I applaud the pre-existing conditions. And so I applaud the other side of the aisle for accepting that, finally coming to the realization that coverage for pre-existing conditions is a good thing, especially when you look at the overall health of the people of the state of Indiana. They need that. So that was a good thing that did come out of this budget. And it was a Democratic idea.
And do you want to have a minority opinion on this, or do you concur as we move on? I've thrown smooth transitions and segues to the wind. We're just going from boom, boom, boom.
You know, the one thing I'll say about this whole point is with regard to whether the budget was just Republican ideas or whether Democrats were taken in as well. Senator Landon said, I think, yesterday that we had thrown out all the second reading amendments from the Democrats that came in. But that, in fact, isn't the case. They had an amendment to increase the per diem that county jails get, And they got a bit of a haircut. I think their idea was to go up from 40 the first year and 45 the next year. And this, and then the final terms of the budget, it was 37 and a half and 40. But nevertheless, it was that came out of a second reading amendment for the Democrats. So there's ideas in there from both sides of this aisle.
Absolutely.
And to keep the sheriffs from shooting up the state house, because they're the ones who are pretty upset about it.
I'm just going to add, this is Representative Delaney's amendment. And I think not only on this amendment, but in other issues as well, which you're probably going to talk about, how relevant House Democrats were pushing issues forward or rejecting bad bills.
Well, I'm going to get to those. We'll see how much time we have left. All right, well, if we're talking about big issues, gaming, lots of, again, it came out, seemed like everybody, there was no gunfight at OK Corral in the end. There seemed to be, everybody sort of took a bit of a hurt. The upshot of this is we might have a casino in, sorry, not Martinsville, but Terre Haute, not too far away, I guess. And Gary, we might see the two boat licenses maybe migrate to the Borman Expressway and on an inland location that might be more conducive to the bottom line. And, of course, sports wagering, both mobile and will be allowed with some taxation that's sort of in the middle of the pack as states go.
Right.
You like it?
I do. Let me just say this. The world of the industry of gaming is always changing, and we are a gaming state, so we have to keep up with the times. And whether it's mobile, whether it's moving around in a license that isn't functioning well or the way we want it to in one particular city and having it to move to another city. So gaming is, talking to former leader Scott Pelas said, I hate the issue of gaming. We have legislators that are all over the map on this thing for different reasons. Sure. And Senator Orlando was a conferee. I also want to recognize Representative Terry Austin, who knows these issues inside and out. She was a Democrat conferee, and I know main goal going into this was to, for those communities that were going to be affected, to be held harmless for at least a couple years, so that we can continue that we can continue to study and see how we're doing, and maybe there's some other ways of working on those. Because I know there's other legislators that were upset may not be in that same held harmless.
And Terry Austin has one thing in common with Tim Lannon in that they both represent Anderson, which happens to be the location of one of the so-called casinos. Although now with the advent of live dealers,
casinos with racetracks.
They're now going to have the date for live dealers at table games has been moved up.
Right.
You got to like it.
Yeah, I do like it. And, you know, that date that had been, previously there for January 2021 was sort of an artificial date.
For the live dealers,
For the live dealers, I'm sorry, was an artificial date, which, the vice president, former Governor Pence, had required in order to get the legislation passed at that time. No one else was really objecting to it. Of course, whenever you have any movement whatsoever in any part of the gaming industry, it affects every other part of the industry. And so I always describe it as a Swiss clock. You move one thing and everything else starts to move as well. So I have to give a lot of compliments to Senator Mark Messmer, who did an excellent job bringing everybody to the table. He was inclusive. And this, by the way, this by and large doesn't become an R versus D type of thing.
It's much more, whether you have something in your district
that's
or not.
Exactly
that's what
right.
it comes
so,
down to.
It's parochial.
Now, you might, again, I was joking about a casino in Martinsville, but maybe future years, right?
I don't know about that.
once Highway 37 and 69 gets done, I'm sure you'll be able to get some traffic down there. Satisfied with this resolution on gaming?
I think so, and I agree with Senator Lannon. Senator Messmer put hours and hours of work into this, even long before session ever began, and because the number of moving parts were so significant. You make one change, and that has a ripple effect onto every other piece of the bill. And I think we, at the end of the day, we came out with a pretty good product.
Yeah. All right. I was going to talk about things that didn't pass. Marijuana legalization, some people talked about. That was actually in your agenda.
Right.
The $2 tax on cigarettes, payday lending legislation, redistricting. Real quick, because we're almost out of time, I'm going to go around. What's the regret? You told me that we're better off than we were 4 months ago. What are you now saying? Dang it, if we'd had those extra... Well, not the extra 5 right. days, but what did you want to do that you didn't get done?
So we were talking about this last evening. I really have none. I jokingly said the Geist Conservancy District, which some of my constituents wanted, and I couldn't convince one of my chairmen to do. So I gave him a really hard time from the microphone last night. But I
don't
think
worry,
we
when
had
redistricting comes around, you'll be cut out of that district anyway.
Yeah,
No, not actually. I think you're safe.
Yeah. So I really have none. I think it was slam dunk session. Let's get the rest of it.
We're going to disagree on that, perhaps. Sure. Well, I think that's a safe bet.
Two things. One, I think the teacher pay issue is still out there. And then second, I do think we need to get serious finally on redistricting reform.
Real quick.
I would like to have been able to move the smoking and vaping age up to age 21. I think it would have been a good step for Indiana.
And even though the dollars, it looked like there wasn't interest in the tax on the cigarettes, there was some
absolutely
movement
there.
Regret.
Well, we missed some opportunities for some important reforms in the state of Indiana, redistricting reform, as you mentioned. I fear now we're not going to have it in time for the next go-around with the redistricting. So that's a real regret on my part. And marijuana reform as well. Many other states are looking at this, and this is just another indication. It's a little bit like our hate crimes. We just can't seem to grasp the here and now, right now, in terms of moving Indiana forward.
All right. Unfortunately, our attempt to cram 4 months into 24 minutes it was somewhat successful, but not entirely. Thank you all very much. Seriously, you public service personified by the people at this table. I appreciate it. My guests have been House Speaker Brian Bosma of Indianapolis, a Republican, House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon, an Anderson Democrat. Another legislative session is history. We'll look at the winners and the losers with the people who cover the State House on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for my weekly debrief with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, a division of Hannah News Service. Ed, so much to talk about. What's your takeaway from this session?
Wow, I don't know where to start on that one, John. Gosh. I think a lot of things did get accomplished, but I'm not sure that the people are really going to remember a whole lot of what actually happened other than maybe the gambling and some education money. But I think one thing that the insiders saw was that a lot of things weren't quite as transparent as they might have been. A lot of things were done behind closed doors in caucuses, in the conference committees. There were a lot of changes in the end, in the last couple of days, that never got heard in public. There were some things that got slipped into the budget, as usual.
The bias crimes legislation, which was mentioned on the show, that was something that was basically brokered behind closed doors.
Absolutely.
Right?
And while some things like the different abortion bills, one of which has already been
the subject of a lawsuit,
were done in public with lots of debate. But the big Indianapolis Convention Center and CIB and hotel bill was one thing that just seemed to pop up toward the end with not a whole lot of public input or debate. There was one big hearing, and then all of a sudden things just really changed. And once the city ended up doing its deal, conveniently, the state, a couple of hours later, managed to come up with all kinds of new language and pass it.
Well, you talk about legs, legislative legs. That's 25 years deal with the Pacers, designed to keep the Pacers here long term, and potentially, maybe, possibly, underline all those words, help build an Indy 11 soccer stadium.
Right.
Could this really be the hidden big impact bill of the session?
Maybe, but again, in terms of transparency, we don't even know where that Indy 11 soccer stadium would be built, that multi-use complex. So there's a lot of mystery to a lot of different items there.
All right. Unfortunately, we have to leave the mystery here. And as always, I appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. That concludes this edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanes. Thank you for joining us. I invite you to join us again next week for the season's final program. Until then, take care.
Purdue researchers are finding new ways to treat cancer, provide drug-free therapies, advance wound repairs, reduce chronic illness symptoms, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.